Generalization about distributions could be made at different levels. One can do that at global scale, where we have kingdoms, system of biogeographical regions widely known and widely accepted. Such generalizations can be made at the more regional levels, such as at the level of continent. But what about more limited areas? Can we make some generalization about distributions of organisms inhabiting some limited areas? Is there something common in their distributions, some common patterns, some common barriers that affected the picture that we can observe now? The focus of my talk is the southern Appalachians, where quite a lot of mountains are scattered up to 2,000 meters high, separated by valleys which can be as deep as 600 meters above sea level. This is another representation of the same area. So on this picture, you can see that for insects, for beetles, which are restricted in their distribution to high altitudes, the area acts as an archipelago of islands of different size, different shapes, separated by gaps of different length. And presumably that had affected the distributions of insects that live there. We'll see this picture again, so let me just explain that here you can see two contour lines. The lower one is 1200 meters, and the high one which encloses shaded areas is 1500 meters above sea level. This area is well known as the capital of salamanders. Perhaps a less well-known fact is that there are other insects, other organisms which are very diverse, and Staphylinids has multiple examples of such diverse groups. So here are some genera listed which are represented in the area but by multiple local endemics. Why did I decide to look into distribution of forest litter insects in this project? Well, it's very convenient habitat to work with to ask questions about factors affecting distribution, because the habitat is continuous, and the presence or absence of the habitat does not influence the distribution. You can look into how other factors affect the patterns that you observe, so it's very convenient. Another reason is that it's relatively easy to sample insects living in leaf litter. If they're there, you will find them. So you just hit the trail, there are lots of them. You sift, you carry your samples, fortunately mostly downhill, and then you process them with lots and lots of Berlizzi funnels. So here are some of the results. And I would like to focus on some of the morphological characters that are typical of these leaf litter dwelling beetles in that particular area. So this is an example of a Geostiba, which is widespread. It has wings, relatively large eyes, and it's relatively well pigmented. Here is one of the endemics of the southern Appalachians. You see that the you can see the short elytra. That is an indication of the fact that the wings are gone. The eyes are very small. The pigmentation is poor compared to widespread winged relative. You see the same trends in other groups. So here is another genus, widespread species of the genus Echinozoma, long elytra, and two local endemics of the southern Appalachians. Short elytra, wings highly reduced. Another example is Desiceros. So this is a relatively widespread species, big eyes, one of the very local endemics, tiny little eyes, just a few Matidiae. Right. So why would one expect to find the same distribution pattern in different genera of forest later staphylinids? Wouldn't that be a naive thing to expect the same distribution in different groups? Well, maybe not if there is a similarity between the groups you're looking at. And there are quite a lot of similarities in all these genera that I listed above. They inhabit similar habitats, they have similar lifestyles, old predators, they have similar dispersal abilities, very poor, they don't fly. And the distribution we observe results probably from very few basic processes such as speciation, extinction, range shifts, range expansion, and range contraction. And so keeping that in mind, you might hope to find something like that in genus A and genus B. You find the same distribution pattern over and over again. So let's look at some real examples. So here is the genus Geostipa, which is a better known example in the southern Appalachians, represented by 12 species. And you see that the trend is that normally there is an endemic species on every isolated mountain. So if there is a gap between mountains, normally beetles don't cross this gap. However, sometimes there are species which occur on several mountains, like in this example, and then there is another species which occurs here in Nantahalas and here in Great Balsams. Pretty wide gap has been crossed, although they don't occur in between. So let's have a look if other genera display a congruent pattern. So here is an example in the genus Ischnozoma. This species group is represented by two closely related species, and we can contrast this distribution with Geostipa, which we already looked at. So you see it's quite different. First, you immediately notice there are just two species, so the speciation on the same map hasn't been going as intensively as in Geostipa. And then you see that for some reason the same species occurs on both sides of this huge gap separating Black Mountains from the Great Balsams, and this is not the case in the case of Geostipa, so clearly something very different. Then there is another species, a wingless species in Ischnozoma, restricted to the southern Appalachians, and this species has even wider distribution going even into Kentucky. Again, very different pattern. So let's look at the Zeceros now and contrast it with Geostipa. So here, well, the number of endemic species is pretty high. There are more out there which are not included yet. But then again, there is no real congruency. You can see that here in the Black Mountains, you have the same species that you can find on Mount Rogers, although in Geostipa, you don't have any of the wingless species represented further south. Instead, you have this widespread species which has fully developed wing, the same as occurs further north everywhere. Right. So it appears that the answer to the question I asked in the title is no. There is no single pattern, and every group appears to display a very different pattern. So why is that the case? Well, now I'm going to read that because I think that's important. When I was thinking why this is the case, I realized that even when they occur in the same area, different taxa live in different landscapes. That is, on different Sky Island archipelagos. Mm. That is, different taxa occur at different altitudes and occupy different intervals of altitudes. Well, that's a little bit too many words, but let me illustrate what I think. So if we look here, let's imagine that genus A occurs only above 1200 meters, and the genus B occurs above 1500 meters. You can immediately see that the landscape they inhabit is very different for these two groups of organisms. The gaps between the islands for this higher elevation group are larger, the territory available for them is smaller, and certain stepping stones are missing altogether. So presumably that should result in a very different distribution. And particularly important that becomes in oscillating climate. And here are some models I played with. Well, let's look just at one of them. You can look at the species, at the group of species distributed at high altitude and low altitude. What is the reaction when the climate becomes warm? Well, when it becomes warmer, they move up, but if the mountain is not high enough, the high altitude species gets extinct. So when the climate returns to normal, you have different pattern. Different result may occur even when the climate becomes colder. As it becomes colder, they go down, and low altitude species is able to cross the gap at this moment. So the result could be that the two species previously inhabiting separate mountains become sympatric. This will not happen in the case of high altitude species. Well, there are a few more examples I wanted to show. No time for that. We'll skip them. Let's have a look at the real life numbers. So these are three groups I just mentioned in my talk. And Yeastieber appears to be restricted to high altitude compared to more narrow range of altitudes compared to this widespreadish nosomally conti. And that may explain why it wasn't able to cross the gaps and succeeded in speciating, while this species has not succeeded. Right. And these are the things I would like to do next to further develop these ideas, but I don't have time to expose them. Sorry about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.